We're going to just look at this thing of the subject of dead or alive. And I don't know if you can or if you read the email yesterday in my little paragraph thing, but carrying on with that. So I'm just saying choices, choices, choices. Already this morning, we've made a few hundred of them, not least of which was get out of bed or hit snooze. Hundreds more will confront us before March runs its course tonight at midnight. Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection presents a choice that is stunning, a kind of get out of death and into life, or stay dead, offer. Accepting it introduces us to life in a kingdom whose very atmosphere is one of unparalleled provision, peace, and promise. Just what all the things we've talked about this morning and the things we've sung about are exactly this. This is this. Crazy, reckless love that chases us down and hunts for us and wants us. It wants us to come from death into life. And for those of us who have accepted it, we find ourselves in this kingdom. And the even though it's maybe, you know, Horace doesn't like the word mysterious, it's hard to understand how God could love us in this kind of way and provide us and do all that he's done for us and still leaves us this span of choices that we make on a daily basis. You know, one pastor said, I wake up every morning a pagan and I have to reintroduce myself to Jesus to decide how I'm going to live my day. And I think we're probably all in that. We still have these choices, even though Jesus has come and brought us from death into life. So I want us to read Romans 5, got them there, verses 19 through 21, and then chapter 6, 8 through 14. And I'm reading out of the Message, so if you have a different version, it's going to be weird. But Paul just says, here it is in a nutshell. Just as one person did it wrong and got us in all this trouble with sin and death, another person did it right and got us out of it. But more than just getting us out of trouble, he got us into life. One man said no to God and put many people in the wrong. One man said yes to God and put many in the right. All that passing laws against sin did was produce more lawbreakers. But sin didn't and doesn't have a chance in competition with the aggressive forgiveness we call grace. When it's sin versus grace, grace wins hands down. All sin can do is threaten us with death, and that's the end of it. Grace, because God is putting everything together again through the Messiah, invites us into life, a life that goes on and on and on, world without end. And then 6 verse 8, could it be any clearer? Our old way of life was nailed to the cross with Christ. A decisive end to that sin-miserable life. No longer at sin's every beck and call. What we believe is this. If we get included in Christ's sin-conquering death, we also get included in his life-saving resurrection. We know that when Jesus was raised from the dead, it was a signal of the end of death is the end. Never again will death have the last word. When Jesus died, he took sin down with him. But alive, he brings God down to us. From now on, think of it this way. Sin speaks a dead language that means nothing to you. God speaks your mother tongue, and you hang on every word. You are dead to sin and alive to God. That's what Jesus did. That means you must not give sin a vote in the way you conduct your lives. Don't give it the time of day. Don't even run little errands that are connected with that old way of life. Throw yourselves wholeheartedly and full time, remember you've been raised from the dead, into God's way of doing things. Sin can't tell you how to live. After all, you're not living under that old tyranny any longer. You're living in the freedom of God. So the wild part of this is, here is this astonishingly powerful act that Jesus did of bringing us by his obedience to the Father's will, to go through all that he went through on what we call Holy Week, leading up to Resurrection Sunday, and his beating, his trial, all that, his crucifixion and resurrection. And still we come out on the other end with this life of Jesus that Paul describes for us here and in other places. And yet, we still have choices. So Paul is obliged, and I love this, because when Paul says, you know, look what he says in the last one, it means that you don't give sin a vote in the way you conduct your lives. Don't give it the time of day. Don't even run little errands to that old way of life. That's because, you know what? It is possible for each one of us to run errands for that old way of life and to give in to the old stuff and to forget where we are and to begin to live as if Jesus hadn't died for us, hadn't been raised to the dead, hadn't given us new life. And so Paul is obliged in all his letters to the churches, if you notice, there's always instruction to the church how to live, give up lying, giving up the deceit, give up having the first place, put away all this foolish talk and coarse jesting and all this stuff. He's always talking to the church. We've been given this new life, and he still says, for some reason, God has not made us robots. Has not just, you know, given us a lobotomy and says the only thing we can do now is parrot his Bible verses. He's given us this choice because he wants to love us, wants us to love him freely of our own will because of what he's done for us. And so it's always amazing to me when I read through these passages and realize, wow, the incredible thing that God did. And then leaving this breach in the wall, you know, where we still have the possibility of going back and doing these foolish old things. Yeah. I mean, certainly not anyone in this room would ever do any of those, but, you know, the possibility is there. Why would God even leave that open? You know, and I think someone had said, well, he wants us to be able to love him freely. So when we say, I love you, it's our choice to say that and not just because we have no choice. Everything else has been erased. Yeah, I was thinking that today we're celebrating communion. And, you know, I kind of had this thought of, you know, what a silly little thing it is. A piece of bread and wine. It's not really a meal. Most of us eat more as an appetizer than we have at communion. But the tiny thing, which is this celebration, this remembrance of Jesus' death and resurrection, the insignificance, really, of these elements by themselves, but what they signify, what they mean, what they remind us of, is really a parallel of how little and insignificant we are and how incredibly important we are to the kingdom when God does this, has his way with us and when he gives us new life. So we celebrate that, even though it's a small thing in some ways. The significance of what God has created in us is amazing. So just looking at 4 points this morning, just really, really briefly, because I want to spend time in communion, and I want to read another of these prayers from this new book, because I think it's really important for us. So number one, our born-in condition. Our born-in, what we were born in because of the sin of Adam in the garden, we're separated by sin. That's how we're born. We're separated from God by sin. We all inherit this thing. And so that's why he's saying, you know, one man did it wrong and got us all in this trouble. That's what, in some versions, they call the first Adam. And then another man, sometimes Jesus is referred to as the second Adam. He came in and he completed the cycle. And he came in and he did it right. And he got us all out of the mess that Adam put us in. So our born-in condition, you know, and if your parents, or if you remember back to your own childhood, if you're young enough, and there's probably a couple of us here young enough to remember their childhood. But, you know, nobody had to teach us to disobey. Nobody had to teach us to do something wrong. Nobody had to say, you know, now, here's how you get over what your parents are trying to do. Here's how you get around that. Here's how you escape anyway. Here's how you get your own way anyway. You know, it's just amazing. You know, these little children, before they can even speak, you know, they have personalities and wills of their own. And they have very significant ways of using lung power to describe their displeasure at what you've done or not done. And, you know, so the right and the wrong is already, you know, those things are set in there, and we have to be taught to obey. And I've often was amazed at this while we were living in France. How many times do parents have to say to their children, say please, say thank you? And in France, it's the same thing. The s'il te plaît and merci. And they go over and over, thousands of times, I'm sure, parents repeat this. And sometimes for moms, especially, to their dismay, because it's like, when will this ever stick? You know? And so, but that's our condition. That's who we are. And Jesus saw this. And so elsewhere, Paul has said, while we were yet dead in our transgressions and sins, Christ died for us. He came not knowing how bad we were. He came because he knew how bad our situation was. This born-in condition, it corrupts us totally. And so he knew that, and he came for us. So our starting place is that. Number two, the battle for our deliverance. As he pointed out here in the message, it's sin versus grace. Sin versus grace. And so I love that when he says, when it's sin versus grace, grace wins hands down. Grace always wins. And he calls grace here in this version aggressive forgiveness. Yeah. You know, one of the songs we sing, I think we sang it last week, my sin was great, your grace was greater. You know, and so we're all in moments where we're really thinking about it, we recognize how bad our sinful condition is. And so our sin was great, your grace was greater. And so grace wins hands down. This battle for our deliverance, this is what it required. Number three, our now delivered condition, shalom.
Yes.
And Keith has done such a great job in the past on more than one occasion, I think, really given this full description of what shalom is. And it's not just peace, not just like the volume got turned off. It's wholeness in every aspect. It's yes. it's completion. It's being filled up. It's being given more than you need. There's just so many aspects, and I can't do it justice, but you'll have to go back and listen to Keith's message. But our now delivered condition. Jesus has done his work. We come to him, and we find that there is a life, there is an expanded version of this life we live, which brings us this, as I said here in the notes, unparalleled provision, peace, and promise. And, you know, as Brian was speaking earlier, I think we all relate. We're all, at least inwardly, we're nodding our heads going, yep, we're there. You know, how many times has God said, you know, I'm going to do this, and our attitude was like, yeah, right, I don't see that, only to end up with egg on our face because God shows up and does what he promised he would do, and then we are obliged to pretty much say, you got me there, because that's his love for us. That's the provision, the peace, the promise that is ours that we get to live in. And then the fourth thing, just in this passage, Jesus' victory. It's our out of death and into life. That's what Jesus did. That's not what we have to drum up. That's not what we have to create. That's not what we have to earn. We sang this morning, I couldn't earn it. I don't deserve it. And yet, Jesus gave him his life away for us. So he did this. He completed the process necessary to bring us out of death and into life, and we are there. And so last week we talked about through muchness, noise, and fog. I mean, living the Christian life through all the stuff of today. And yet, if we our starting place, our new starting place in him is shalom. If we just could still our hearts long enough to say, I live a life in God, which is perfect in its provision, perfect in its peace, perfect in its promise, then all that I have is available in him. Our problem is when we run after the false stuff, the things that can't really provide. So, you know, those kind of things that are constantly promised to us in our marketing people and all that know just how to catch us and rope us in, you know, by the imagery and the music and the promises that are there. All you need to do is buy this and your life will just be sweet. And these are the promises that are ours. I've redone the promise of Jesus in Matthew 11 at the bottom of the page like we had last week, because I still think this is amazing to us. Jesus says, come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn how to live freely and lightly. And so all this is available to us. This is the kingdom. This is the shalom. This is our new situation that we find ourselves in. And you think, well, that'd be the easiest thing ever. We just, obviously, we live lightly and freely, and we know the unforced rhythms of grace, and we never have a moment's stress, and we never have headaches and backaches and stomach issues and ulcers, because we have perfect provision. But then there are these choices that sit over here that keep promising that they're going to fulfill in ways that Jesus can't. And so we go running after, easily after these things. And so I think that's why it's so important for us to recognize that in his sovereignty, God's chosen to give us life, which is full and complete in every way, and yet we still have the ability to serve him and choose to serve him. And so we sang this morning, I'll worship you as long as I am breathing. And it's remembering that and pulling away from the muchness, the noise, and the fog. And I don't know about you, but I need to pull away more and more often, because those things can absorb and completely chew us up if we allow them to take precedence. We need to be involved and aware, but I think we need to pull away from the muchness, noise, and fog long enough to recognize that in Jesus, in this kingdom life that's been given to me, the life of Jesus that we now live, Paul says to the Galatians and to us, you know, this provision is amazing. And so we need to focus on him first and let him fill us up and set the pattern for our days, and then engage with that understanding as the of a provision, so that we go into it, we don't allow those things to empty us and completely sap us, but we go with all that provision into the fray of the world that we live in. And so this morning, I want us to just, as we come to communion, I just want us to take some time to recognize that we've been invited. Jesus says, as often as you do this, remember, and not just the pain and the agony and the horror of the week leading up to his crucifixion and his crucifixion, but what we're remembering is the completion of this circle to bring us from death to life. That this is, he is completing the demands of a holy God to restore what was broken in Adam and to bring it to us again afresh. And so we have this new life available to us because of this that we celebrate. And then after we've taken communion, I want to read this prayer this morning as we close up. And just as a way to, let's settle ourselves. Let's not always rush, and let's not always let the clock push us into racing down the highway or whatever it is we do, but you know, actually have some moments where we are still and without being antsy inside. For some of us, we can be still on the outside, but that doesn't mean that there's not a gazillion things roaring around in here and in here. So just having some moments of peace is really sweet. So the Lord invites us this morning. So Father, we bless you for the power of your word. Could you penetrate through all the different layers that prevent us from rejoicing in this provision? We know your word. We know your love. We know the story. We know the ending. And yet, the muchness, noise, and fog sometimes takes over. And it blurs that stuff. And then false promises start pulling us away from you. And our confession is this morning that we are so easily distracted. So, Father, in these quiet moments, we pull ourselves back and we cause our minds and our hearts and our souls to focus again in these few moments on this amazing provision that is ours. You know us fully, and you fully provide. You know our waywardness, and you love us. You see our failings and our fallings, and you pick us up and you encourage us. You see when we're empty and frustrated and angry, and you come to us in healing and peace. O God, gather me now to be with you as you are with me. Soothe my tiredness, quiet my fretfulness, curb my aimlessness, relieve my compulsiveness. Let me be easy for a moment. O Lord, release me from the fears and guilts which grip me so tightly, from the expectations and opinions which I so tightly grip, that I may be open to receiving what you give, to risking something genuinely new, to learning something refreshingly different. O God, gather me to be with you as you are with me. Forgive me for claiming so much for myself that I leave no room for gratitude, for confusing exercises in self-importance with acceptance of self-worth, for complaining so much of my burdens that I become a burden, for competing against others so insidiously that I stifle celebrating them and receiving your blessing through their gifts. O God, gather me to be with you as you are with me. Keep me in touch with myself, with my needs, my anxieties, my angers, my pains, my corruptions, that I may claim them as my own rather than blame them on someone else. O Lord, deepen my wounds into wisdom. Shape my weaknesses into compassion. Gentle my envy into enjoyment, my fear into trust, my guilt into honesty, my accusing fingers into tickling ones. O God, gather me to be with you as you are with me. Amen.